This is hour number 3 on October 15th, 2013, of our interview together, Jack Jennings, on federal education policy and states' impact. So in this hour, I would like to know what you think the lessons learned are and what the possible solutions are, realistic or not.
Well, I know states sometimes get concerned about what the federal government does in education. And that's part of the tension of having a federal system. But the federal government usually gets involved in an issue when it's not being adequately addressed at the state or local level. So if states want to do something positive, I think they could should address these problems in education more forcefully themselves. And in my opinion, what we have now in the United States is a collection of school districts within each state with weak governance at the state level. And if we were to address some of these problems, I think the states must become more active in terms of school finance, in terms of teacher qualification, distribution of teachers, common curricula, materials for teaching teachers adequately, reforming state schools of teacher education. I think if the states are serious, instead of just being critical, if they are serious, they should take positive action themselves. And if the states think that this means encouraging private schools or privatization, I think that's a dead end. I don't think that's what's going to happen. The number of private schools in the United States today, or the number of children in private schools in the United States today, is under 10%. And when I was in school in the 1950s and 60s, it was 12-13%. And the reason is that the number of Catholic schools is closing, and it seems to be a downward trajectory, which isn't going to be reversed. Some states have enacted voucher programs, but they're going to help open a couple schools or keep a couple schools open. They're not going to be a major answer. Mm-hmm. And so, and the research has shown that the private school options, vouchers, charter schools as semi-private schools, they don't produce any better results than regular public schools for comparable children. So that's a dead end. It may be that there should be private schools for religious reasons. It may be that there should be private schools just to have an alternative, or charter schools to just have an alternative. But if states are looking to those institutions as ways to improve the education of all children or the bulk of children, they're not going to find the solutions in those areas. They have to deal with broad social, broad education policy.
Why do you think the voucher movement has gained the support of some governors and some states?
Because Republicans, politicians like vouchers because they think it's a way to cripple the teachers' unions, and they think it's a way to encourage competition in education. It is a way to hurt the teachers' unions, but it is not. Competition has not proven the end all that they have thought it has. It hasn't improved education. So I think it's more ideological than anything. At the local level, you will have local Democratic politicians supporting vouchers, frequently African Americans or Latinos. And I think that grows out of a frustration that their kids are in rotten schools, their public schools, and they want a way out for their kids. And so they're willing to cross a party line and join with a Republican governor, as occurred in New Jersey, in California, just because they want something better for their kids. And so, but the evidence, at least the evidence to date, shows you don't get something better through vouchers or through charter schools. Maybe through charter schools, parents feel better because the schools are smaller, maybe they're a different style, maybe they like the idea of choice themselves because they don't have many other choices in life. But in terms of quality of education, the national data don't show that there's charter schools or vouchers produce an increase in student achievement. So we're back to no simple answers. We're back to don't try little things. If we're going to improve education for the vast bulk of children, it comes down to improving curriculum, improving teacher training, and these are all hard issues. We should close some schools of education that are producing poor teachers as a signal that the country's serious about getting better teachers. With teacher salaries, the OECD says the United States ranks 22nd out of 27 industrialized countries in terms of teacher salaries for comparable people with similar education. And so we're not going to attract the best if we don't pay them, if we don't train them well. I was talking to some people about Finland. Finland is the current rage. Everybody's looking at Finland. But Finland took something like 20 years to develop its system. It has very little testing, and it has very little accountability, but it developed a common curriculum, a common set of expectations. It raised the bar for who could become a teacher, so that now you have to be highly educated, rank high at the university to become a teacher. The curriculum is common so that people know what they should be taught in colleges of education, they know what they should teach in the school, they know what should be involved in pre-service and professional development. People know what the expectations are, but it took them a long while to do it, and it wasn't done through a rightful approach of mandating testing. Mm-hmm. It was done through years of work developing a better system.
And in your opinion, this should happen at the state level?
Our states are comparable in size to countries. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we should have a national curriculum. I don't think we should have a national teacher and pay schedule. I think things are just too varied around the country. And the federal government provides about 10% of the cost of education in elementary, secondary. So I think we should try to have state systems of education, where states address real problems themselves.
Are there any states that are doing that, in your opinion right now?
No.
That we should look to?
Maryland is trying to deal with issues at a state level, and Massachusetts is trying to. But in Massachusetts, you'll have the commissioner, at least the former commissioner, stand up and say, I can't tell a school district what to do with curriculum. And so we have to get over that. The school districts shouldn't have to decide themselves what they're going to teach. Now, we are going to get over that with the Common Core curriculum. And there is some states that are back away from the Common Core, but there are a handful. We still will have the vast majority of states using the Common Core curriculum. And as I understand it, that it's based on solid research, both international and national, and it raises expectations for all kids, and it does a very important thing, which is that it's progressive, so that they started out with what a kid should know as you finish high school, and then worked all the way back. Very few states do that now. Rather, they will have this curriculum or that curriculum or this expectation or that expectation, but they don't have a unified set of expectations and curriculum that go all the way down to first grade. So, and this calls for deeper thinking and inference, inferential thinking, writing. It calls for things that kids aren't doing nowadays, especially poor kids. The Common Core curriculum, I think, is a wonderful equity tool. What it will mean, if they have adequate tests that measure it, is that large numbers of kids will fail. But that means because they're not being taught adequately. They're not being taught a high enough degree of quality. And we just have to work our way to that. I mean, you can't avoid, if you have a hard problem, you can't jump to an easy solution. You just have to work your way through the hard problem. Now, I think there's a role for the federal government to encourage states to work in this direction, but I don't think there's a national curriculum or national salary schedule that should be adopted.
Mm-hmm. And so the encouragement would come in the form of what?
I believe, this may be a belief of one, but I believe that the federal government should pay for at least 20%, if not a third, of the cost of elementary secondary education for several reasons. One is that the federal tax base is just so much larger than any state tax base. And so it's easier to fund things nationally than it is by state. And we're moving towards energy independence with fracking, with natural gas. The United States this week overcame Russia as the largest producer of energy in the world. We're moving towards energy independence. I think we should have a tax on energy and use a little bit of the money we're going to gain through this immense emergence of energy and create a national trust for education and have the federal government pay for a fourth or a third of the cost of education. The other reason, besides the tax base, is that the inequities between states are enormous in terms of spending, because just as within a state, school districts have greatly varying tax bases, so states have greatly varying tax bases. In some states they have oil, like in North Dakota, they're swimming in money because they've got all sorts of energy. In other states like Nevada, they're sinking because people aren't going to Las Vegas like before. So the national government can even out the resources among the states.
With how many strings attached?
I would go to, I would move away from categorical funding. And I would move away from the accountability in NCLB. And I would go to general aid to the states from the federal government with conditions attached. The conditions would be that states would have to work towards ensuring that every child has a challenging curriculum, a well-trained and effective teacher, safety, that children are healthy, that they have some involvement of parents or other adults. Now, I would set these as elements of a good education. And then for poor children, I would ensure that these elements were carried out, if they can't be carried out with parental involvement, that they be carried out with the involvement of other adults helping poor kids, mentoring poor kids. And then I would require that states move towards equity in funding, that there be no more than a 15 or 20% variance between school districts in terms of resources, with additional money given for at-risk children. But the twist I would have on this would be that I would suggest the creation of a national council of governors, chief state school officers, teachers, parents, local educators, and have them write the regulations to carry this out, with the U.S. Secretary of Education as the chair of the council. But the U.S. Secretary of Education could only overturn the way that they've defined what these elements are if they're unreasonable or won't lead to a better education for children. Otherwise, I think this council, which would be heavily state-based, locally-based, should write the regulations to how to carry out a good education. And then I would back it up with something similar to the Civil Rights Act and allow the Attorney General to sue a state if there's a pattern of lack of good education. Not individual cases of parents suing because they get angry at a particular teacher, but rather if the Attorney General determines that in Idaho there's a pattern of the state not providing a good education. I would, President Bush too and President Obama have both said that education is a civil right nowadays, by which they meant that it's such an important issue to do well in life that it should be considered the equivalent of a civil right. Well, I would make it a civil right by allowing the U.S. Attorney General to sue if it's not carried out. And I would make it a civil right by having a good education defined and providing adequate federal money and adequate financial resources to carry it out. So if states want to do something positive, mm-hmm. instead of just complaining, this is something they should do. In New York State, where this project is based, the governor is being sued again because New York State lost a lawsuit about inadequate funding. They were told by the court, the state court of appeals, which is their Supreme Court, that they have to provide more money for education. They haven't done that. And so now the plaintiffs have gone back into court and they're suing Governor Cuomo in order to have the state pay for an adequate education for children. And the premise of the lawsuit is that if we're going to have a citizen who sits on a jury, that that citizen has to know certain things about reading and writing and understanding civics and government and society to serve on a jury. And the state isn't providing money so that that's adequately accomplished throughout the state. Well, instead of states complaining about the federal government, they should take the initiative themselves to improve their own schools and do it in a systematic way that improves the quality of teaching and learning for all children in the state.
And I'm hearing all these voices of state officials saying we don't have the capacity to do that.
If they don't, then they're going to have the federal government passing laws that are going to usurp what they could do on their own. Mm-hmm. Because you're not going to have less competition in the world. You're going to have more competition in the world. And so even if China isn't as competitive, Vietnam, other countries are going to be competitive. So the United States can't sit on its hands. Other countries are educating their kids better than ever before. The world has awakened where people want to be middle class people. They want to have adequate housing, they want to have a good job, they want to have a good environment, they want their kids educated. And in the past, we could ignore most of the world. But once China came out of isolation and once Asia woke up, once Latin America is starting to wake up, we have to do better. You can't stand still. I mean, if anybody has a digital device, realizes that as soon as they walk out the store, the next generation has just been put on the shelf. Mm-hmm. I mean, things happen so fast with technology. They're happening fast with social change, too. And we can't stand still. So if states aren't going to do anything, the federal government will do something. Mm-hmm. And the federal government may not do it right, but something will be done.
Well, so I also wanted to follow up with the NCLB and sort of if we ever get to a reauthorization, what you think that should look like?
I think we should rethink everything and get rid of categorical aid, get rid of NCLB, and go to block grants, or go to general aid to the states with conditions. But with accountability, I would propose that there be testing at three levels, third grade, eighth grade, and 12th grade, and that the testing be to see whether the kids know how to read and write in third grade to go on to fourth grade, whether kids know in eighth grade enough to go into high school, and whether kids know enough in high school to leave high school. And so I wouldn't test 3 through 8, I would just test 3 times. And I would require that there be other testing that is helpful to teachers rather than for accountability purposes. In other countries, like the UK, like Japan, they have testing, but it's at the end of schooling, and the burden of achieving results is on the student, not on the teacher. So the student is punished by not being able to go to university. It isn't the teacher that's labeled as incompetent.
Or gets their pay docked or something.
And so what it means is that the student has strong motivation to do well because they're going to do well. But does a student in the United States today have a strong motivation to do well on a test? There's no personal repercussion, and it's just a label on the school or on the teacher. So I would change accountability and put it on the student and put it at certain landmarks where the student would progress on.
So you've obviously thought very deeply about how to improve education policy, and it strikes me in this country anyway, policymakers are often not educators. So would that be part of your solution as well, to have more input from those who are doing practice?
Right. Well, when I was head of the Center on Education Policy, I rarely put my name on a report. I usually let the researchers write the report, and I would check to make sure it was accurate or objective, or we had outside experts review, and then they would go out under their names. And the reason I did that was that I'm not an educator. I'm not a researcher. The most I've taught was in Sunday school for a couple of years. And so I don't have the experience in a classroom. So I hesitate to give advice about education. But as I go off into retirement, I feel I was probably the only person left who saw the federal role from the beginnings in the 1960s to now, that I should try to draw on what I saw. Absolutely. To see what should be done. So I am giving my advice, but I'm not an educator. And so I don't know whether my advice is the right advice, but in terms of politics and policy, this is what I think makes sense. But educator, what I'm going to do is put this out next year and let educators react to it.
Yeah.
Educators should run their own profession. That's what, I'm a lawyer, that's what happens in the legal profession, that's what happens with doctors, dentists, that's what happens with professionals. Teachers are not running their own profession. And it's because, in my opinion, teaching is not respected as a profession. And I think it has to be changed so that it is respected. And that is partially due to the anti-education feeling in the country. It's partially due to the fact that teachers were women for many years who stayed home after a certain time. It has to change so that teachers are respected, that they're highly educated, that they're well paid, that they're doing a good job. And we're not at that point yet.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, the politicians who are setting the policy are always looking for a cheap, fast answer. Charter schools, vouchers, tests, evaluating teachers on test scores. They're always looking for something on the cheap, something on the fast. And you don't create a good system that lasts over time if you adopt that approach. You have to put building blocks in place year after year and keep constantly improving. Like, I don't think we should go to saying that teachers can only be in the top 10% of their graduating class. But I do think today we could say 25%, and then in a couple of years maybe say 20%, and then maybe say 15%. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think we should move from being the 22nd nation in the world to being the 10th, to being the 5th, mm-hmm. in terms of teacher pay. So I think you have to have pay and resources go up with quality. I think you have to do it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if state leaders aren't willing to do that, then they, for the next 20 years, they can complain about it not being done or the federal government messing it up.
Mm-hmm.
But my feeling is that the federal government is going to continue to get involved in this because states aren't involved to the degree they should be.
And you did also mention, I wondered if you could comment on this sort of cultural anti-education movement, you know, that,
yeah.
that we sometimes I've heard that, you know, if NCLB is set up to create all this failure, that may create a movement against public education or an argument
yeah.
against it. And I don't know how to
square
that.
I think in this country, we value education as a means to getting a better job. So the parents will tell kids, stay in school to get a high school diploma because that'll get you a good job, or go to college because that'll get you a good job. I don't think we value education for developing the mind or for understanding our culture better. You just look at the number of kids that were sent to Afghanistan and Iraq who had no idea where they were. And you look at the number of people, Americans, who have been in Afghanistan and Iraq, who speak the language. Almost nobody. And yet they're walking through villages with guns, possibly killing people, without being able to communicate with people about who they are. And so how can we do this in a world? I mean, if we're going to be powerful, we have to understand the rest of the world, which means we have to be better educated in languages, in culture, in politics. We just have to know more. If we're going to be successful in business, we better know more. We were just in China a month ago, and they certainly aren't sitting still. I mean, I had been in Beijing 30 years ago, and they've created a whole new city within 20 years, in a city that looks like New York. And I mean, they're not sitting still. And so if we think the schools are fine, we don't have to address these hard problems, we might as well get used to falling farther and farther behind in the world, because that'll happen. The only solution is to address hard problems and keep at it. And if the states want to run schools instead of the federal government, the solution is that the states have to deal with these issues and have to deal with hard issues, and not go with tricks like vouchers and other things that aren't going to work.
So why did you, I know you said you were expert by accident in some ways, but you did choose to concentrate on public schools.
Right. Well, when I announced a year ahead of time I was leaving the Hill, I went through all sorts of interviews. I think I counted once, I went through 30 interviews with research companies, with law firms, universities. And the law firms told me, well, you can be liberal, you know, and still make lots of money. So I went through all these interviews. And I decided, well, for 10 years or so, I would set up a think tank and try to improve public schools through objective information. And I was partially influenced by the fact that so many groups in Washington are ideologically based and have a solution, and they just spend their time writing reports to come to their solution. And so I wanted a group that would look at things and objectively say, this is happening or that's not happening. And the reason I picked public education, when I retired, they gave three different retirement parties for me, and one of them was the U.S. Catholic Conference. And it was because they said I was always fair to private schools and all my dealings on the Hill. And so when I went to that reception, they said, well, why don't you concentrate on private schools? And I said, no. The reason I think it's so important to the country to concentrate on improving public schools is that today 90% of kids go to public schools. Even if private schools were to double, which would be about impossible to do, you'd still have 75-80% of the kids in public schools. And so the vast majority of the future of the country is being decided in public schools today. The people who are going to become presidents, senators, business leaders, military leaders, ordinary citizens are going through public schools today. And so if we don't concentrate on improving public schools, we're not concentrating on improving the future of the country. Mm-hmm. If we concentrate on private schools and expanding private schools, all we're doing is helping a slice of the country do better. And there's no assurance that those are going to be the vast majority of people. Numerically, it's impossible. And so just by numbers and by common sense, you have to improve public education, as hard as that is to do. And you just have to stick with it and do your best.
What do you think the successes have been in public education? Just to end on a upbeat note.
Well, I can detail particular successes, such as there is a closing of the achievement gap between white kids and black kids. There is a closing of the achievement gap between Latinos and white kids. So there are equity successes. Those groups are nowhere near where they ought to be, but there are equity successes. In terms of children with disabilities, children with disabilities are in ordinary classrooms where in other countries they are not. They're being treated as ordinary human beings. and they're going on to college at far greater rates than ever before. In terms of women, partially due to Title IX, because the Equal Rights Amendment never passed, so partially due to Title IX and other changes in society, women are finishing high school at higher rates than men. Women are finishing college at higher rates than men. Women are going into professions at higher rates than men. And women are becoming majorities in some professions where they were ostracized before. And it's partially due to Title IX. So there are individual successes, but I would end by saying that just in an ad hoc way, if you talk to parents about the type of, now these are parents who have kids in the current public schools, compare the homework your kid is doing today with what you did at a comparable age when you were in school. And my experience has been most parents will say the homework they're doing is more difficult than what they had. So kids are being taught to higher standards today and more difficult subject matter than they were taught when they were young. And so that does show that we're getting improvement. We're just not, we just have to keep at it.
Mm-hmm.
And just recognize that we are doing better than before with a more challenging student body because we have more poor kids, more immigrants, more kids learning English. We have a more challenging student body. The test scores are not going down. They're going up. And I think kids are learning more, but they're not learning what they need to know completely. So we're on our way, just that we have to continue on our way.
Thank you. I'm glad that you put that piece in here.
Right. I know sometimes you get lost in the negativism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there's the power to do a lot still.
Right.
That's good.
Right.
We'll hear you.
Good.
All right. Thank you.